How you doing? Just before we get stuck into today's podcast, a little note from our sponsors, BetterHelp. We've teamed up with them in order to help you. Everybody's been dealing with this pandemic and various other things that have come along with it in their own way. And you may have dealt with that successfully. But if you haven't, if you're struggling a little bit and need a little bit of extra help, why don't you tap into the world's largest network of licensed, accredited and experienced therapists who can help you with a range of issues, including depression, anxiety, relationship trauma, grief, and much more. Anything that is bothering you, these guys can help you out with it. With their therapists, you get the same professional quality that you would expect from an in-office therapist, but with the ability to communicate when and how you want, which is most important. And obviously with us teaming up, there's always a discount that comes your way. You can get started today with a 10% off your first month. Use the discount code DISCIPLES. It will automatically be applied if you go through betterhelp.com/disciples. If you type that into your URL, all the information's there. And of course, if you then decide to go through the checkout system, you will automatically be given a 10% discount on your first month. Right. With that said, let's get on with today's show.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 550. We are the Fight Disciples. This one's dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts, mainly UFC, but there's a bit of everything going on today. Seeing as that there wasn't any UFC at the weekend, geez, man, I'm even going to be talking about stuff that happened in a triangle ring, if that's even possible. Before we get to the T's and C's of the show, please subscribe to us. You could get stuck in via iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Fight Disciples is our website. Go there if you need an Android feed. We're all over social media as well, as we try to keep you up to date with everything that's going on over a 7-day period in the world of fight sports. And we're on YouTube too, where we're trying to grow our platform. And I would like to thank you. Thank you very much if you've already subscribed to it, because the numbers are growing. More people are watching us. I mean, I thought that we were just faces for radio, but no, people are actually wanting to tune on in and see fresh new haircuts, which they were logging into yesterday. And might I say that new haircut of Mr. Pete is looking even better today. You've been out for a walk today, I can tell, haven't you? There's a little bit of extra fuzz in there. Have you put some Soul Glow on it? Have you put some Soul Glow on that? That's like 1970s vibes, man.
I've had a woolly hat on because it's so cold, and I've just taken it off, and I think the static of the woolly hat,
yeah, nice,
has actually made it look even better. So this could
very
be
scouse.
A new thing.
Yeah, it's very scouse. It's like 1970s volume there, mate. I like it. It's very scouse.
That's it.
There you go. So there you go. There's all the places that you can get a bit of Fight Disciples action. So please subscribe, follow, be a part of what we're doing. Over the next few weeks or so, hopefully we'll bring you more content, especially as we head towards UFC 269 happening in Vegas a week on Saturday. But there's a bit of action this weekend to preview. Before we get to that, though, Nick, I'm going to let you choose what we start with, mate, because there's no UFC at the weekend, right, to talk about. So you can start with Triller Triad Combat, fights that have been announced, mm-hmm. Chimaev issuing more challenges to every man and his dog, or we could even start with Michael Chandler sucking on Conor McGregor's balls. You could go with that one. You could go with Dan Hooker moving back down to 145. What do you want to go with first up, mate?
Let's go with a little bit of let's go with our news then. Let's start off with Dan Hooker boiling himself down to featherweight,
yes.
And then we'll go straight into a little bit of Conor Mac red panty party.
Yeah,
Chandler.
I like it. So people will have seen that Dan Hooker, who is now the Fight Disciple. I mean, you have original Fight Disciples. You have guys that obviously that come in and come out of the Fight Disciples foray. Dan Hooker is the OG. He's in the Hall of Fame. We've only got one fighter in the Hall of Fame. Dan Hooker's in there already, and he's active. And it's all down to his attitude towards fighting. He will do it anytime, any place, anywhere. And he's now even decided that he's going to chop his cock off to get himself back down to 145. Please remember that he was once upon a time a 145-pound fighter, and he was devastating down there. He went up to lightweight to obviously become just as devastating. Yeah, but we've all spent time in Dan Hooker's presence. He's a big lad. He's six yep. foot plus. He's bigger than me. He's wider than me. He's thicker than me. But he's going to weigh 50 pounds lighter I say 50, 40. I'm being harsh on myself. But the best part of 40 pounds lighter than me when it comes to fighting. He's going to get himself down to 145 pounds. Did a test weigh-in, didn't he, last week? He seemed to have made it quite comfortable. And he's targeted the Korean Zombie first up. Doesn't fuck about, does he? Let's get straight in there, mate. I think it's a good move, you know. I think it's a good move. With everything that's gone on professionally for him recently, I just think a nice, fresh, clean start. There's no point in going up to 170 because they're fucking monsters, absolute monsters. So if he can get down there safely, I think he will be a force. And I think there's a nice little pool of featherweight fights that have just been made recently, mate, that are just floating underneath the champion and the top boys, the Max Holloways and what have you. Dan could get straight in. If he can get a fight with Korean Zombie, he can get straight in the mix with a win.
He could absolutely, but he could also get fucked up just as easily. Not to cut to the chase, like.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
So there's obviously two ways this is going to go. You know, we're talking about Dan Hooker now, who's on a career worst, lost three of his last four. Okay, the three losses he had, Dustin Poirier, champion, unelect, Michael Chandler, legit contender, who had the fairy tale start to his career, courtesy of Hooker's chin. And of course, he had the win over Nasrat, but then he lost in his last fight to Islam Makhachev, who is the champion in waiting. So there's no shame to the losses that he's had in those three of those last four fights. And when you look at who he beat in the build-up to that as well, Gilbert Burns, top contender at welterweight now, James Vick, excellent boxer, Aya Quinta, one-time contender, Paul Felder, one-time fucking nightmare mauler. They're all solid wins in the run-up to him getting a top 10 rating. So I get why he's doing it, because he feels like the door is well and truly shut now. Because to ever fight for the title at lightweight, he's basically lost to three of the top five contenders or top six contenders. So it's going to be next to impossible for him to make a run inside the next 2 years. If he goes down to featherweight and gets a signature win, yes, he torpedoes straight in because he's Dan Hooker and he's a name. And of course, there's an opportunity there.
And the champion's Australian, isn't it? I mean, you got Australia and New Zealand there. It's a massive, massive fight.
Bingo.
If you can torpedo in.
Exactly. You know, so what's to say if he jumps in straight away and gets that win over Korean Zombie? Well, you've got the perfect fucking double header to go down under once it's safe to do so, with Rob Whitaker against Izzy, and you've got Volkanovski against, you know, Dan Hooker. I know they're kind of quasi teammates, but Dan's only going down for a reason. He's going down because he thinks he can get a title shot down there. And what a matchup that would be, the size of Dan Hooker compared to Alexander Volkanovski. He knows what he's doing. Dan is obviously thinking, I've trained with Alex. I've seen him in the gym. I believe I've got the attributes to beat him. That's why he's doing it. And that's why it pisses me off when the likes of Kamaru Usman go, oh, no, I'm not interested in moving up and facing Izzy. Izzy's my boy. Get to fuck. Izzy doesn't put bread on your table. Izzy doesn't pay your mortgage, you soft cunt. Get in there and fight him. Actually, that was terrible language. You can tell I'm not sitting next to my wife today. I can't believe I've just dropped the C word. Jesus Christ.
For those that are not watching this, because I will put this up on YouTube, this particular piece, Nick has actually changed offices. This is what happened. I've stopped you mid-rant here now, but I should have flagged this at the start. Nick's not in his normal studio because his wife only allows him in his own studio on Mondays. And we're obviously recording this on Tuesdays. His wife now takes over the studio for the rest of the week as she is also working at home. And Nick is in his living room. But that's a good sign for all the Fight Disciples. Because they're not side by side, it can be real Nick Pete. I had a conversation with my mum the other day about the language that we use on this show, right? Because my dad started listening to the show again. And my mum flags, oh, it's disgusting, some of the stuff that he says on there. Absolutely disgusting. That's not my Adam. That's not the real Adam. Mum, yes, it is. I'm fake Adam when I'm round you. This is the real guy. Anyway, I've stopped you mid-rant, mate. Go on, carry on.
Correct. Let me just take back this to UN.
No, you can't take it back. You've said it.
That's not part of my vocabulary, so I don't know where that come from. I'm just so excited.
Yeah, but as a put down, soft cunt is a great put down. I like it.
Yes, mate. Of course. So the point I'm trying to make is Dan Hooker isn't bothered about the fact that Alexander Volkanovski is a quasi teammate, is a pal, is someone he's spent time with. He doesn't care. Because Alexander Volkanovsky's got his own life, his own legacy, his own career, and his own family to provide for. This is the fight game. Okay, I kind of get it when you're teammates, when you're with each other day in, day out. I kind of get that. But you know what? Kamaru Usman then went, well, I'll tell you what, Gilbert Burns is on a surge, so I'm going to leave the gym. I'm going to go over here. Likewise, back in the day, John Jones steps in to replace Rashad Evans, beats Shogun Hua, becomes the champion. What does Rashad do? Rashad goes, well, okay, well, there's no home for me at Jackson Wink anymore because I want that belt. I'm going to go and set my own team up on the other coast with Black Zillions. So This is what athletes should do. This is why Kamaru Usman and that bullshit excuse does not wash with me. It's you've only got a short window of a career. Doesn't matter whether he's your mate or not. He's got what you need. He's got what your legacy and your mind should deserve to define your own legacy, to make as much money as possible in this fight sports. There is no friends. There is no show friends. It's show business. And I like the way Dan Hooker's gone, you know what? Boom. I'm kind of done at lightweight now for the foreseeable. Fuck it, man. I'll go down and smash Alex. There's a narrative there I can sell. I can get in the gym and go, right. He might have even ran Volkanovski and went, listen, mate, you know the score. It's all business. Boom, phone down, UFC, I'm doing a test weigh-in. I want to do featherweight because I tell you now, get me a win over Korean Zombie and I will give you the doubleheader that you need to go down under. And what a doubleheader that would be. Absolutely massive. New Zealand against Australia, times two for two UFC belts. That's 80,000, that Melbourne bullshit. That's recreating Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey down in Melbourne, breaking records kind of scenario. So I love what Dan's trying to do. He is the ultimate fight disciple, as you say. Motherfucker is Hall of Fame, chiseled into the rock. But if he loses the Korean Zombie,
he's fucked.
He's the new cowboy, isn't he? He's the new Donald. And you're like, oh, shit. Because this is what Donald did. Donald went the other way, though. He went up to welterweight, gets smashed to bits by Darren Till. You've just got to be careful. I get why he's doing it, but he needs to tread carefully, man, because Korean Zombie is no one stepping stone.
Just on featherweight, look at these fights that are coming up over the net. I've tried to put down as many big ones as possible that are booked or rumoured to be booked. You've got Josh Emmett against Dan Ige, right, which is coming up at UFC 269 on December the 11th. That in itself is a title fight, contender. You've got Calvin Kattar against Jika Kikadze. There's another one on January 15th.
Ooh, baby.
Because Jika Kikadze is on an absolute tear at the moment. If he gets a win over Calvin Kattar, who I hotly tipped at the start of this year, if you remember, mate, he's in. Evloev against Topuria, maybe that's just slightly one down, but I tell you something, the winner of that then does rise to maybe get involved in an eliminator. That's on January 22nd. And then check this out. Edson Barboza versus Bryce Mitchell. Woo-hoo! That's coming up in March, man. That is elite of one style against elite of another style.
Yes.
Grappler versus striker. The best of the very best in each of that. That's an old school UFC fight. March 5th, that's what that's rumoured for. And I tell you something, if especially Bryce Mitchell, if he comes through that, ragdolling Barboza all over the gaff and chalking him out, that guy's got the personality to be able to carry something off the back of that to then get himself in a position.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. But you could buzz through all the weight divisions like this, you know. There's so many amazing fights coming up. Lightweight alone is just insane. Have they made Makhachev versus Dariush now? Is that confirmed? I think it's confirmed because I'm sure Habib tweeted saying, these are the best two lightweights in the world. These guys are the best. Forget about Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira. These are the best two in the world. And I thought, wow, fucking hell. Habib there, man, nailing his flag to the mast.
Yeah, but he's done that because he smokes everybody else. Anybody that he's beaten doesn't get any. I've beaten him, so no, they're not the best in the world. I thought he's not been in with Benny Hill, has he? And to be fair, I mean, the Indian summer that Bernard Dariush is currently having is absolutely tremendous. This is a great fight. It is a great fight that they've made there. And you would think that if Islam Makhachev comes through that fight, as I would tip him to do because of the way that he's fighting at the moment, he's next.
Yeah.
I don't care whatever the noise is anywhere else, he's next if he comes through that fight.
Well, that is unless, you know, the Teflon Don makes a comeback.
No, well, he is doing. He is coming back. He's coming back in April.
April, isn't he said?
Well,
MMA training from April, he says.
There you go. Full-time MMA training from April.
June?
Yeah,
July?
International
Fight Week in July?
Yeah, that's what you would... That's Red what that suggests. Yeah, but... We're talking about a title fight that's coming up in December. So are we not going to have another title fight at 155 between now and July?
Nah, let's just wait for Connor.
Right. In fact, while we're speaking about Connor, we touched upon it at the start of the show, didn't we? Michael Chandler's a clever boy, isn't he? He knows exactly what he's doing. He's had his time at Bellator. He's come bursting onto the scene in the UFC and had a wonderful debut against Dan Hooker, who we've just been speaking about. But then he's just fallen short in the two fights since. against, again, elite competition, where you've got the champion, the new champion in Charles Oliveira, and a guy that is set to be...
That was a title fight, don't forget. That was the title fight. That was a vacant title fight. And then he took on basically the number two guy in the division, the guy who thinks he's the number one in the division, and went toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah, and should have, and listen, and threw it away, kind of, in the last round. If he'd gone... Listen, Gaethje probably still wins for most of us, but Chandler didn't help himself in that final round, did he? He kind of, hands down, walking forward, being a bit daft. But what he's done now, obviously, he's thought to himself, where's my next move? What do I do next? I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to snuggle up nice and cozy to Conor McGregor. Well, everybody else goes for Conor, don't they? Everybody else gives Conor shit. Everybody, and he's an easy character to give shit to because of the way that he's carrying on about his life and the way that he gives shit to everybody. So it's easy to retaliate like that. Michael Chandler, nah. Not at all. Listen, if you're giving Conor shit, you're just a Conor hater, man. That guy is doing all this for the UFC, and I'm thinking to myself, I see you. I see you. I know what you're doing. Yeah. Clever lad. Clever lad. Because let's be straight, I think it makes good dough. Both of those guys can sell a fight.
100%. 100%.
It's a fantastic matchup stylistically if Conor can get fit. And it puts Conor in a good position if he can beat Michael Chandler. And it puts Michael Chandler in a good position if he can beat Conor. It makes a whole lot of sense, man. Makes a whole lot of sense.
I think if I'm Conor McGregor right now, I love that fight on every level because you're right. You beat Michael Chandler, you're getting the next title shot next. Whether doesn't matter how you permeate it, you've always got to remember that Conor McGregor's the biggest star the sport's ever seen. Mm-hmm. But what he is right now is a non-legitimate title contender. Because of the run that he's been on, the run of losses. He has to beat somebody in the top 10 rankings for anyone to go, okay, give him the next title shot then, no complaints whatsoever. Because you've got, for me, you've got obviously Oliveira versus Poirier about to go on for the title, which is the chance that Dustin Poirier has been waiting for, that he turned down to face Conor and cash in, no complaints there, but he's still got to beat Oliveira. For me, the winner of that fight should definitely face Justin Gaethje next. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking at the winner of Islam Makhachev and Daniil Berriush as the final eliminator to be the next guy standing. However,
look at you. You're going full commissioner, Rod. Commissioner. I like
full
it.
Full commish. If Conor McGregor is back in June or July and he does beat Michael Chandler, then Conor McGregor 100% gets the next title opportunity, no matter what the permutations are. Because there's a big fight with Islam down the road that we can sell on the back of the Khabib breakdown and all that. And the UFC have obviously got one mind on that. But none of that can happen until Conor gets a legitimate win. And Michael Chandler represents a legitimate win. Also, two other reasons why it's attractive to Conor McGregor. Michael Chandler is basically a jacked-up version of Chad Mendes. A slightly bigger version, very similar style.
I think he's better with his hands. Favours
the overhand right. Big, powerful overhand right. Prefers to knock people out. Will want to make a statement, so won't necessarily take Conor down. But if the shit hits the fan, we'll revert to type and we'll take Conor down. But you can see that fight playing out very similar to the Chad Mendes fight if you're Conor. And I'm not talking about Conor here being 100% Conor, not distracted Conor. God only knows what's going on, Conor. I mean 100% Conor. Otherwise, no other version of Conor McGregor really is worth talking about because the only version of Conor is the best version of Conor that can compete. So let's pretend he exists. Let's pretend he's going to return in 2022. The other reason I like the fight is, for Conor, Michael Chandler left a piece of himself in Madison Square Garden. That is a fact. That is a fact. Just like Justin Gaethje left a piece of himself, maybe not as big a piece because that victory fills your soul, but I think Michael Chandler left a piece of himself inside that octagon in Madison Square Garden. We were there, man. You could see it. You could see both them men left a piece of themselves in that octagon forever. And it will go down forever as one of the greatest fights of all time. But there's only so many times you can compete like that. And I think getting Michael Chandler next for Conor, and Michael Chandler that, okay, he was still standing, but fuck me, I don't know how he was still standing. Mm-hmm. I think it's the perfect timing for Conor McGregor. It's the perfect fight because Michael Chandler, as you pointed out earlier, knows how to sell a fight as well as anybody, not Conor, but as well as anybody else in the lightweight division. He knows what to say. He knows how to handle the media. He knows how to turn that fight into the biggest fight in the lightweight division in 2022. And that's what Conor needs, the right dance partner to make the right amount of money. So Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor, 100% sign it off for me. Let's book it. July, International Fight Week 2022. Let's do it, man.
Makes a lot of sense on everybody's part as well. And rest time as well. From Chandler's point of view, he needs a rest after that fucking war, doesn't he? So July, summer next year. Works out, baby. Keep working it, Mike. Keep working that Instagram, man. Keep working it.
We'll keep retweeting it. You keep saying it.
Fucking right we will. Absolutely, mate. We want to be there. Now, after the back of ragdolling Jacko Manson in a wrestling challenge, Hamzat Chimaev has popped his head above the parapet once again. And he hasn't got a fight booked in the UFC as of yet, which obviously we're all upset about. We want to see him booked and we want to see him fighting. But that's not stopping him from calling out past, present, and maybe even the future. He's challenged Georges St-Pierre. Any type of fight. He's challenged Brock Lesnar. Any type of fight. And he says, do you fancy a straight-up wrestling match, DC? Let's go, baby. Let's fight until... This is his quote. Let's fight until one man leaves the cage. Hamza, what the fuck is going on with this dude? He's just off his tits, isn't he?
Well, for a start, all three of them are retired. So yeah. I don't know why he's saying shit like that. I don't know why he didn't... I know he come out and said it, but I didn't know why he wasn't beating the drum louder to face Leon Edwards, to come in and replace Jorge Masvidal and face Leon Edwards next week after next. You know, that fight was allowed to fall away and Leon was... I know now Leon is getting to negotiate with the champion, with Kamaru Usman, and it seems like he's going to get that fight next. But there's nothing for me, that fight. With all due respect to Leon, he deserves it, great, but I can name two or three fights in the welterweight division that I'm far more excited about. I'm... At least two of them involve Khamzat Chimaev.
Leon versus Usman's doing nothing for you?
Not really. Not compared to Masvidal versus Colby. I think that's a better fight. I think Chimaev versus anybody in the welterweight division, top five or six, is a much better fight just because the order that's around it. I think Kamaru Usman versus Leon, as much as Leon deserves it, does not make my balls tingle. It really doesn't. It is what it is, man. I hope Leon gets it. I'm glad they're finally going to get it. But it's not the most exciting fight in the welterweight division.
I know what you're saying.
It's
not the most
marketable fight.
I know what you're saying. From a marketing point of view, from a media point of view, these guys aren't going to light up the microphone, are they? They're not going to do that. They're not going to sell. No. Also, as well as that, when it comes down to the intricacies of the fight, it's a technical affair.
Yes.
It's a thinking man's fight, isn't it? That's exactly what that is. Whereas the other fights that you're mentioning, it's high adrenaline, just craziness.
I don't understand why Khamzat didn't heavily campaign to face Leon. Why didn't he go into campaign overdrive to step in next week and face Leon Edwards, which would have been a final eliminator? Could easily have been dressed up as a final eliminator.
There was, and I don't know where he's at on this, I'm completely speculating. There was a situation where he isn't vaccinated, and to get into America, you need to be vaccinated.
Khamzat?
Yes. So right. He went back to Sweden to get vaccinated so he can fight in America. I don't know. Listen, I'm totally speculating. I know that was the case last time out. He may be vaccinated by now. I don't know. He may not be vaccinated by now. But with everything that's going on in America, and to be able to get into the country, you need to be fully vaccinated. Maybe that is a situation. Again, total speculation. Might be talking out my ass. But I know that was a situation that he was looking into.
And then obviously speaking about the welterweight division, there is of course one other fight that must be mentioned that should be top of everybody's list as the most anticipated fight of 2022. And that is of course the return of the legend, the one, the only, the future champion, the undefeated, the main man himself, the Kazakhstan monster, the 14-0 main man that is, the legend, Shavkat Rakhmonov, who returns.
I know you bring him up.
February the 5th. Takes on Carlston Harris. I'm sorry, Carlston, but you better start digging your grave now, son, because the icon is on his way. And Shavkat's going to take him apart, man, and Shavkat's going to lay claim for this welterweight. Listen, he's coming, I'm telling you.
Listen, We've got a lot of new listeners. You best explain why you're going wild on Shavkat.
Because he's an icon.
No, so it's because he wears a fucking mental hat, right? That's why you started flirting with him, right? Because of the mental hat thing. And then obviously he just started smoking every dude. So then you went, he's my guy. He's my man. So Shavkat Rakhmonov is your guy.
Yes, back in Abu Dhabi in October last year, I spread some knowledge. We were doing the BT Sports show and we were asked to make our picks.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, there's a guy making his UFC debut here He's 11-0. He's all finishers. His name's Shavkat Rakhmonov from my favourite country in the world, Kazakhstan. He's basically, if you haven't seen him fight yet, and you're welcome because you can go and have a look at his back catalogue and have your mind well and truly blown. Knocks people out, submits people, does what he wants. Basically does what he wants. But he's basically a hybrid between Habib and Hamza Chimaev combined into one, with the looks of like a Charlton Heston. That's who he is. He's absolutely sensational.
And he wears and he a hat that looks like February. Basil fucking Brush, man. That's
and okay. Yeah. He wears one of those war hats as well, which obviously we love. And man, he's coming to take over. He doesn't make as much noise as of Chimaev because he doesn't speak English yet, but that's something myself and Team Chavkat are working on right now. And he's the real deal, baby. You better believe he's the real deal.
Shavkat Rakhmonov. As soon as I saw his name announced, or a fight announced with his name on there,
I saw here
he fucking is. He's on him again. Absolutely buzzing for a bit of Shavkat.
Shavkat's back.
Right, are we talking about Metallica? Because that's the highlight for me of Triller Triad Combat. Honestly, fantastic. When I flicked it on at the weekend, and I've got to be honest with you, there's not a cat and nails chance that I'd have watched this. I wouldn't have watched it, and I just relied on you to talk nonsense about it. But because there were no UFC, I was still high on the boxing. I thought, oh, go on. Everybody seems to be talking about it on my timeline. I'll go and have a little bit of a nosy in. And then Metallica's there, and I've, fair play to them. I'm going to get a ticket next time they're in the UK. They're pretty decent, aren't they? You know what I mean? It's not really my bag, but Metallica, they were doing bits. I got pumped up off the back of that, and I thought to myself, it's quite impossible to listen to two or three Metallica songs back to back and not want to have a fight after it. Just for me, I sat at home, quiet as a mouse, watched three Metallica tracks. I thought, I'm up for it now. Let's go.
Yeah.
So if you're in the arena, carnage is unfolding. Bit unsure about the triangle. Got to be honest, Nick. I don't know if the triangle works for me. It's an odd thing.
Oh dear. The whole point of the octagon was to take away the corners so fighters wouldn't get pinned, so that was more of a fluid contest, which is why, of course, Bellator use a circle-shaped cage for the same reason.
Yeah.
Why not do, a pentagon there's other shapes that they could have gone.
Yeah.
I don't understand why going backwards from a ring. It's like they've got no concept of what a boxing ring. You know, a good fighter can use footwork to corner you in a boxing ring and keep you in the corner. Yeah. But obviously, to decrease the number of angles down to a triangle, basically you get stuck in the corner of a triangle, you're fucked because there's no way out.
Fight's over.
There's no way out.
Yeah.
So, very, very strange idea. I'll be honest, I didn't watch the whole show. I only watched, in brackets, the highlights. Mm. But it was exactly what I thought it would be, which was shit on a level of shit.
My first thought was, why not
how the fuck have they paid Pulev to do this? That's what I thought.
Well, I was thinking, what was the meeting like when they came up with that? We're going to do it in a triangle. Did they have conversations like right angle or isosceles? What was the conversation? Madness. Absolute madness, mate. But listen, for those that don't know too much about it, I'm going to read you the crack here, right? Because the aim of, as you've just said there, it's taking place in a bloody triangle.
Shaped boxing ring.
Yes. And the aim is pitting boxers and MMA fighters against each other, all right? They've got special rules for this. And in this event that Triller were putting on, because I always sigh whenever I see Triller and Fight Sports together, I always sigh because I just think, here's the fucking Wild West and it's cowboy time. But former UFC heavyweight champion Frank Mir stepped inside the triangle-shaped ring to face the hard-hitting world boxing challenger Kubrat Pulev in what promised to be a fight between two big sluggers who would not need judges to determine the outcome. Michael Buffer were there, reading the crack and what have you. One thing that I do take away from it is that Mike Perry got a fucking win. Well done, Mike. That's a turn up for the books, isn't it? Here are the results from it, just for people that want to know. Kubrat Pulev beat Frank Mir That was a stoppage because he got cornered in one of the crazy little corners. But everything else was...
Watching that as well, I think Dan Miragliotta, who was an MMA referee, by the way, I think he wanted that Frank Mir to die because he should have jumped in about 10 seconds before he actually did. When he eventually jumped in, Frank Mir was out on his feet.
Yeah, but
Pulev was looking at Dan Miragliotta to go... If I hit him again, he's probably going to die, you know?
Yeah,
Big
yeah.
Dan's like, like, fucking hell, Dan. What's Frank ever done to you?
Get him out of there. Alexander Flores beats Matt Mitrione. You've got Mike Perry beating Michael Seals. That was via a split decision. Derek Campos beat Brian Vera. Albert Tumanov, bloody hell, there's a name. Scott Simon. That was a unanimous decision. There wasn't too many knockouts in this, which I was disappointed by. Alexa Klupp and Alinja Hofschneider. There was a knockout in that one. And Harry Gilotti against Jacob Thrall. Split decision. There you go. I wouldn't recommend going back and watching it. It's a thriller event. It's fucking shite.
The thing is, this trillion, the amount of money they throw around is ridiculous. And they must have, you know, give Kubrat Pulev a small fortune. This is a guy that 2 years ago was fighting Anthony Joshua for the heavyweight title or whatever it was.
Mm.
Now he's in a triangle-shaped fucking ring fighting against the overweight and out-of-shape Frank Mir.
Mm.
Absolutely diabolical. So they've paid him a fortune. No doubt they've paid the others decent money as well. Then you've got Rampage Jackson and fucking... what's his name? Shannon the Cannon Briggs as team captains. So they're on Wedge. Then you've got Rampage doing interviews saying shit like the UFC and Bellator better watch out. For what? For what exactly? For this? Jesus Christ, are you for real?
It's a team thing, isn't it? You get points for each victory, so therefore the team wins at the end and all that.
Team MMA actually won, bizarrely enough.
Yeah, they did.
Listen, who cares? Hopefully it was the first and last. Put it down in the folklore of fighting with shit like Yama Pit Fighting, which was some bizarre MMA
show, MMA snakes
event where they banked the side to the octagon. Can you believe that? It was like curved up like a skateboard ramp, so you literally couldn't escape. You were fucking walking. Anyway, whatever. Put it down in history as yet another stupid idea that God only knows who's financing these bleeding things. But hey, Pulev got paid. Big Frank got paid. No doubt Rampage got paid and Shannon the Cannon. So, yeah, man. We've spent enough time talking about that bollocks.
I think they benefited from not being any MMA on at the weekend.
So
people were just thirsty, weren't they? I want to see some violence. Where's the violence at? Fucking hell.
It wasn't there.
Crazy. The violence does return this weekend. I'm just having a look down at our talking points. Yeah, we can get into the previews now, can't we? Because we've got Bellator on Friday night, and there's a great fight there. And then you've got, obviously, UFC back this weekend with 14 fights on a card.
Yeah.
Prelims have gone crazy. Some decent ones in there. There's some rescheduled fights that we missed out on because of injuries and what have you previously. So we'll talk about them in a minute. And obviously, your main event of Rob Font and... Jose Aldo is an absolute banger. But if I can just touch upon Bellator 272, which is taking place on Friday night. Sergio Pettis, Kyoji Horiguchi, back in Bellator. Now, for those that don't know too much about the narrative here, Kyoji Horiguchi was the champ. Then he got offered a few quid to get himself back over to Asia to go and mop up with various people like ONE Championship and Rising and all that type of carry-on. So he reneged the belt. He vacated and cleared off. Anyway, in the meantime, Sergio Pettis has walked up at Bellator and become the champion. Kyoji Horiguchi has had a chat with Scott Coker. Bish, bash, bosh. He's back in and they've sorted the fight out. I think it's a really good fight, mate. Really good Friday night action. And I would say, listen, obviously our good friend Gareth A. Davis is right on in there with the Bellator gang. And I just said to him, over the last 18 months, they've pulled the socks up, man. They've sorted themselves out a little bit. Obviously, it helps with us in the UK having a little bit more access through the BBC deal that they've had. But the matchmaking's been miles better. Obviously, we got the AJ McKee and the Pitbull fight, which was a real belter. We got the light heavyweight tournament, which kind of flattered to deceive a little bit, but at least the momentum was there. The effort was there to try and do something, you know what I mean? We saw in Dublin last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, they pitched hometown fighters against real challenges, of which they ended up getting they ended up picking up losses. That's what you've got to do. You've got to put people in proper fights. Okay, Michael Venom Page recent out, did he win, did he not win? That's up for everybody to debate. But at least he was put into a proper fight. That's what we want.
Yeah,
that's what we want to see. And again, this weekend, you've got a proper main event there. We Sergio Pettis taking on Kyoichi Horiguchi, and I think it'll be a great fight. I think we're in for a bit of a treat on a Friday.
Yeah, Horiguchi, you know, had a good run in the UFC until he ran into Demetrius Johnson fighting for the flyweight title, and then he went back home again for, as you say, competed over in Rising in Japan and a few of those promotions, and you know, he was absolutely in good form. And likewise, Sergio Pettis, you know, I think they realised that he hit a certain level in the UFC, and he realised he could earn more money and maybe go on a title run over in Bellator, and that's exactly what he's done. He picked up the Bellator bantamweight title last time out. Both these guys were UFC flyweights, but they're competing at bantamweight over in Bellator, which is probably better for their health anyway. So they're probably feeling a lot stronger, a lot bigger. And on paper, it's a great fight, an absolutely brilliant fight. And even the Emmanuel Sanchez, Jeremy Kennedy co-main event in the featherweight as well, that's a decent fight too. So you're right, man. Bellator have pulled their socks up, and hopefully it's a sign of things to come in 2022. And once they probably get back on the road again, then, you know, it's imperative for any sport that, you know, you have competition. You know,
Pepsi and Coke, man. It's Pepsi and Coke, innit? That's what you need.
Exactly. You need to have competition. And right now, UFC is the Coca-Cola, and, you know, Bellator it certainly isn't the Pepsi, it's the Kool-Aid. And everybody else is the Kool-Aid or our whites, and, you know, everyone's a
roller cola. I like our whites.
So do I, but it's very domestic. So Cage Warriors is like our whites. Cage Warriors is our whites. You've got Bellator, which is like Kool-Aid.
Tizer.
Yeah, and then you've got ONE FC, which is like that dodgy Red Bull that's full of cocaine that you have when you go to Thailand, which puts you off your tits. Have you ever had a kind of Red Bull in Thailand?
Corked up Red Bull. Exactly. No, I've never had it, mate.
Yeah. Mate, I don't know what's in the Red Bull in Thailand, but last time I was there, I had one Red Bull, and the next thing you know, I was on a stage with three glow sticks in my mouth. It's fucking mental. Absolutely mental. And that's ONE FC all over, you know? You don't get exactly what's on the tin. 10 million viewers. Wink, wink, shush. Sure you do, yeah. Sure you do. Whatever. But yeah, competition's good, man. And Bellator, we've criticised them a lot over the years. Quite, you know, because of poor matchmaking and because of the lack of opportunity to watch it easily. But they are, Scott Coker is slowly but surely getting his shit together. And yeah, man, this is a good main event. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to tune into it.
There you go. And that says a lot. To give up your Friday night to tune into it, because it is a good main event. And like Nick said, there's a couple of nice ones on the undercard as well. So make sure you check that out. That'll be on the BBC iPlayer. And then we fast forward into a Saturday night bit of action. I'm just wondering where I start here, because I want to save the main event till the end. If I can just quickly flick onto the prelims for people that may remember when they had Alonzo Menifield taking on William Knight. That fight was booked. Fucking hell, that was months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember us doing a preview for it on BT, and it was months ago that fight was booked, and obviously it fell off last minute. Then I think one of them got a last minute opponent change and all that type of carry on. Anyway, it's back on. It's back on this weekend. Light heavyweights. We talk about the light heavyweights all the time, of it being one of those divisions where, okay, we've got a new champion now in Glover, fully deserving, but there's a lot of guys just circling underneath. And of course, we talk about Rakic. Of course, we talk about Prochazka and all those type of characters. These guys are probably just one level down from that, but it's not a massive disparity between them. These guys can really kick on this weekend, and I think that's a really good piece of matchmaking to get that fight back on, because both of those dudes are legit.
Yeah. Are you talking about Jimmy Crute and Jamala Hill? Is that what you're talking about?
No,
I'm talking about Alonzo
I'm on the prelims. I mean, we could go into the main.
Prelims?
Sorry, mate.
No, just what you were... I was looking at... The one I'm looking forward to on that main event, or other than the main event...
You always love Jimmy Crute. You always love
Jimmy Crute. I'm a huge Jimmy Crute fan, yeah. I think he's fucking awesome. And he just needs experience now, you know? And I think that what you just said then about Menifield and Knight is exactly transferable to that same fight on the main card, Crute versus Jamala Hill, because... Again, one level below the champion, but absolutely the next generation ready to take over. I think this is a brilliant bit of matchmaking. Both young guys, both got very impressive records. That Jimmy Crute has got a win over Paul Craig on his record, where Jamala Hill got Paul Craig last time out, suffered the first loss in his MMA career against Paul Craig. I think forgive me, Jimmy Crute's last fight was against Anthony Smith. It was supposed to be his big breakout moment. He came up short with a resurgence, Anthony Smith. But Jimmy Crute is absolutely a top-ranked, top 10 guy. And Jamal Hill wants to get in there. So that, for me, is the one that jumps off the page on the main card. I love it. But just to dip back in to the prelims again, you know where I'm going. I've got a love affair with Aussies, and Jimmy Crute's an Aussie, isn't he? I think he's an Aussie.
I'm going for my Jake. Oh, Jake Matthews.
The Celtic kid, baby. He's been, since he went back to welterweight, he was on a brilliant run. He's got wins over, you know, Jing Liang and Diego Sanchez and Amel Meek and stuff like that. Good wins, but he did suffer a loss last time out to Sean Brady at 259. That was in March. So he needs to get back on track. And I think right now there's, we touched about on it earlier in the show with Hooker and with Whittaker taking on Adesanya next and everything else. There's going to be an explosion of Australian UFC action as soon as this pandemic, fucking, unfortunately, it seems like we're going back into it, whereas we were hoping it'd be dying down by now. But when the UFC can possibly get back into Australia, there is a massive, massive card to happen. And the likes of Jake Matthews and Jimmy Crute and all these guys, they just need to get themselves in a winning position, because they will be handed big opportunity fights when that super card comes around.
Main card, you've picked out the light heavies, haven't you?
Yes.
I'm just having a quick look down there. I mean, the Brad Riddell, Rafael Fiziev fight, mate. These are mates. You'd think, kind of what you were saying before about the Usman thing, right?
Yep.
These are dudes that are mates, that know each other. They've trained together in the past. And obviously, they fully understand this business. Putting each other in the octagon together against each other, former sparring partners. Let's just fucking go, man. Let's just absolutely go. And the ramifications of it, both identical records, 10-1. Mate, fair play to the pair of them for getting this fight on.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And you know what? Just on that point as well, there's a Legends match here. You've got Clay Guida taking on Leonardo Santos. Both got to be fucking touching distance within 40. Two completely different styles. Clay Guida's been in the UFC forever and is a all-action, high-tempo wrestler, just a complete lunatic, you know. Everyone loves Clay Guida for what he brings. The Carpenter lives in his fucking trailer, just pulls up at any gym, does camps here, there and everywhere. You never know where he's going to pop up next, but you do know what you're guaranteed with him, and that is high action, loads of fucking great transitioning from striking to wrestling, just a non-stop dude. And then you've got Leonardo Santos, also 40-odd, whatever, Brazilian, fourth-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, been on some incredible, like, 10-15 fight unbeaten run until his last fight when he got knocked out, when he was winning ahead on the scorecards. Mate, a Legends match. I love it. I've got no issue of guys of this ilk, of this generation, fighting each other and bringing it to the octagon, because I don't need to see Clay Guida in a lightweight title eliminator or against anyone in the top 10. But for Leonardo Santos, a win over Clay Guida could well torpedo him something to something else, even though he is into his 41st year of life. But yeah, man, that one jumps out at me too. Mate, this card's fucking awesome.
Main event.
Yes.
Do you want a mad prediction?
Go on.
Rob Font's going to knock out Jose Aldo.
Oh, you didn't go there. Fucking hell. You were telling me that Jose Aldo's resurgence and he's and he's this and he's that.
He is. But Rob Font's got dynamite in his hands. Don't fuck about with that dude. Can Jose Aldo stay away from him for 25 minutes? That's the question I've got. I think Jose Aldo's technically far better. Right? Far better. Jose Aldo, if you actually look at his finish rate in the UFC compared to where it was at in WEC, it's far lower. Far lower. He's not knocking dudes out. He's not finishing dudes as once upon a time he used to do. Rob Font is. Can you stay away from Rob Font for 25 minutes? I don't know if he can, mate.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can. And Rob Font hits silly hard for a bantamweight.
He does. But, you know, let's look at the fact that Aldo's knockouts on his record. So he got knocked out by Connor on a night when he absolutely lost his head, and Connor, that was part of Connor's fucking dream scenario takeover. Then he got stopped twice by Max Holloway, which was when he was, you know, shot at featherweight basically, and then he come down and he was outboxed by Petr Yan in a title opportunity at bantamweight. That probably came a little bit too soon, and he got on the back of that bad decision to Moraes, and the UFC needed an opponent for Petr Yan and decided to go with nostalgia. So I'm not saying for a second that Jose Aldo's got a bad chin. Because all those I can make a count for.
Mate,
and
I don't think Rob Font
is as good a boxer as Petr Yan, and I don't think he throws as many shots as a Max Holloway, or hits as hard, for that matter, as a Conor McGregor. So I'm actually going to disagree with you, sir. I'm going to say that Rob Font, as you've just pointed out, is going to find out that this sport is about levels. And technically, he's in there with a man who is technically better than him, who has achieved a lot more than him. And I think this is Jose Aldo's time to shine in this Indian summer of his career that he's having. Mm-hmm. It won't end with a loss to Rob Font. It will end somewhere else, but it isn't going to end this weekend to Rob Font,
well, then,
in my opinion.
The ramifications then of this, mate, we're talking about title contenders in other divisions, weren't we, earlier on, like at 145. This is legit. Because if you're looking around for title guys, I mean, I don't know where TJ Dillashaw's at right now regarding his injuries and all that type of stuff. People keep mentioning his name as the guy that should be next in line to be fighting off the back of the Aljo, Petr Yan, if they ever do get it on type scenario. These guys aren't far behind, mate. You could easily shoehorn one of these two into a title fight with a win here, couldn't you?
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. I think it's a busy little division. I think for Aldo, as I say, he got his opportunity in this weight division a little bit too soon, in my opinion, but he is ranked number 5. So he's then within touching distance. He's there or thereabout. I think Rob Font's one place above him. So you're talking about top contenders. These are two of the top guys. I just think that what Rob Font is lacking on his career is those big names.
Here it is. And it's happening this weekend.
Listen, he's got a win over Cody Garbrandt last time out. Mm-hmm. Win over Sergio Pettis, who we've just been talking about, is fighting for the Bellator gold. He's got a win over Marlon Moraes, former champion himself. But that knockout power that you talk about, for me, hasn't transcended up against these top guys. It's all good and well knocking out your George Roops and your Joey Gomez's and stuff like that. But when you're up against... You're going a distance with Garbrandt, you're going a distance with Ricky Simon, you're going a distance with Sergio Pettis, you're going a distance with Rafael Assunção. Okay, I've skipped over the fact that he knocked out Marlon Moraes there, but, you know, that 5-rounder with Cody Garbrandt, as we know, is chinny. I would argue maybe even more chinny than Jose Aldo. So I don't know, man. I think you're getting a bit carried away with Rob Font's power here. By the way, if you're listening to this, put all your money on Rob Font by knockout in the first round. That is fucking absolutely for sure. But yeah, man, I don't know. I think I fancy old Jose Aldo. Late stoppage or, you know what, more than likely, a wide points decision.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Jose Aldo stops him, that's a big statement for Jose at this stage of his career where he's currently at.
If either man gets a stoppage...
Yeah, I agree.
They're right in the frame.
So you're going Jose, I'm going to go Rob, yeah?
Yes, sir. Yes.
With the stoppage, absolutely. Pair of them. Fucking hell. There you go. There's a couple of fights for you to get bloody wet about this weekend.
And next week, woohoo!
UFC 269, you got a couple of title fights. We would have loved to have been previewing Masvidal versus Edwards. That's not to be. But we've still got a plethora of tremendous fights to get stuck into with Charles Oliveira taking on Dustin Poirier for the strap at £155. There you go. We made a show out of not very much going on this weekend, yes. Didn't it? You know what I mean?
Superb.
We even mentioned that bloody Metallica triangle thing. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. We will be back next week, obviously reviewing everything that happened at the weekend and previewing UFC 269. So come and join us for that. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on our website if you need Android feeds. They're all there, fightdisciples.com. Our social media is open and ready to rock and roll. And we'll have some little bits going up on YouTube as well. Fight Disciples there. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.